This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 51 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Fantasy football is a process over results oriented game. You have to pay attention to the results in order to alter and fix your process at times, but there are going to be times where a sound process just doesn't yield great results. There are going to be times where you start Larry Fitzgerald against an awful Colts secondary and he walks away with three catches for 21 freaking yards. That's going to happen. You might remember, but last week I talked about this dude in my brother's keeper league who traded Kareem Hunt straight up for Le'Veon Bell. And I talked about how it wasn't the smartest thing in the world to do. Week 2's performances didn't change that, even though my boy Kareem Hunt dominated again and Le'Veon Bell did not. Because fantasy football is a process over results game. This is a big reason I'm into Le'Veon Bell still this season. And spoiler alert, he's the first person I'm going to get to on this week's show. But before getting into things, I wanted to send a quick note that with the NFL season here, remember that you can catch all the games on TuneIn and the TuneIn app. At home or on the go, listen to the home call of every game live, or pop in and out of the action every Sunday with NFL First and Goal. That's TuneIn's audio red zone station. Download the TuneIn app today and listen to the NFL for free for 30 days. TuneIn is your everything audio app. Okay, now let's talk about Le'Veon Bell and a handful of other players across fantasy football. Buy Le'Veon Bell. Look, I get it. That's two games now and two pretty mediocre performances from one of the top picks in fantasy football this season. Le'Veon Bell owners are not very happy. But let's look at these first two games from Le'Veon Bell and dissect what happened. Week 1 was kind of an anomaly. Bell was coming back from his holdout. He didn't play any of the preseason. He ended up seeing just 72% of Pittsburgh snaps, which is fine. Look, that's not a bad snap rate. But that's not that fine for Le'Veon Bell. He played at least 87% of the Steelers snaps in every game that he was active for last year. And then week 2 hits. This past week, he was not very productive. But if you remove the actual production that Le'Veon Bell had, everything was actually perfect. He was on the field for 92% of the team's snaps. He had 27 of the 29 running back carries in the offense, and he caught 4 passes on 4 targets. That's an unreal workload. So where's the production been? Well, I said week 1 was somewhat of an anomaly for Le'Veon Bell, and I do think him coming out of that holdout had to do with his poor production against Cleveland. He only carried the ball 10 times. That only happened once in 2016. And then the matchup against Minnesota in week 2 was a tough one. They have a good front 7, and they allowed the 7th fewest points to running backs in fantasy football last season. And here's the crazy part about all of this. If Le'Veon Bell would have just scored a touchdown on Sunday, we wouldn't be talking about Le'Veon Bell as a bust. Those touchdowns will come. So far on the year, the Steelers have run 3 plays within their opponent's 5-yard line, but each of those plays has been a pass. Last season, over 41% of those plays were rushes. Positive regression will eventually hit Le'Veon Bell, especially in a better matchup. So in my opinion, it cannot hurt at all to go to the Le'Veon Bell owner in your league and send him a trade offer. They might be overly frustrated with this slow start, even though this slow start is kind of easily explained. Sell Terrence West and add Buck Allen. This is the third time that I'm talking about Buck Allen, and this is the third 15 Transactions podcast. But each week, his situation has gotten better and better. Before going into week 1, I had Buck Allen on the 15 Transactions list because I don't think Terrence West is that good at football. Terrence West, according to analysis that I did, was one of the lower tiered starters in the league. So Buck Allen wouldn't have that much to overcome in order to get some sort of role in that Ravens backfield. And then Danny Woodhead got hurt, and that meant Buck Allen was going to see the field as the primary pass catching back in the Ravens offense. And then in week 2, Buck Allen ended up out attempting Terrence West 14-8 against the Browns. He saw 6 targets to Terrence West too. But most importantly, and this doesn't show up in the box score, Buck Allen played 62% of Baltimore snaps while Terrence West was on the field for 22% of them. Now, I read a report that there's a slight injury that Terrence West is dealing with. But still, even still, those snap numbers and that snap discrepancy is huge. Because you generally expect Terrence West to be on the field more in a positive game script like Baltimore saw on Sunday, because his skill set is that of an early down back. He's not the team's primary pass catcher out of the backfield. We know this. This is exactly why we added Buck Allen off the waiver wire after Danny Woodhead went down. And Buck Allen saw 6 targets on Sunday. Terrence West only saw 2. But Buck Allen seeing this much early down work on top of his receiving volume means that he could be incredibly fantasy relevant this year. Again, I understand there's an injury to Terrence West, so maybe that played a giant role as to why Buck Allen saw so much love in the second half. But even still, Buck Allen is going to be a viable fantasy asset even if Terrence West is completely healthy and seeing more of that early down work. Because the Ravens like to utilize their running backs in the passing game, and that's the role that Buck Allen is playing. I should note too, the reason I'm selling Terrence West is not just because of this injury and the fact that Buck Allen outsnapped him and outplayed him in week 2. Marshall Yanda is now done for the year, and that's a bigger deal for an early down back like Terrence West because he might not see as much running room versus a third down back or a receiving back like Buck Allen, who doesn't need that room to perform. It's going to hurt Terrence West a lot more than it's going to hurt Buck Allen. So if Buck Allen's on your waiver wire still, go pick him up. And if you own Terrence West, start sending out offers. Add Chris Carson. Speaking of players that I've had on every 15 transactions episode, Chris Carson's another one. Week 2 was truly Chris Carson's coming out party. He ran the ball 20 times out of a possible 25 running back carries. Thomas Rawls saw 5 touches. He had 93 yards in Seattle's win over San Francisco. Chris Carson saw 61% of Seattle's snaps. Thomas Rawls saw 20% and CJ Procise 21%. This looks like it is Chris Carson's backfield. And even though Seattle has offensive line issues, any running back seeing this type of work needs to be on a fantasy roster. Buy AJ Green. AJ Green owners can't be all that pleased with his production over the first 2 weeks of the season, but there are some positives to take away here. The most obvious is that Cincinnati just fired offensive coordinator Ken Zampezi, promoting Bill Lazor to that position. Lazor was the offensive coordinator in Miami in 2014 and 2015. The Dolphins in 2014 had a 1.49 pass-to-run ratio, which was the 9th highest in football. And the following year, they had a 1.71 pass-to-run ratio, which was tied for 3rd in football. Those have been the only 2 seasons in Ryan Tannehill's career where he's thrown for more than 4,000 passing yards. That doesn't talk about efficiency, that talks about pure volume, but that's kind of what we're after from a fantasy football perspective. I think this move should naturally, or at least in theory, help AJ Green in the offense. It's kind of hard not to, given how poorly they've played the first 2 weeks of the season. But like I said, I think that a lot of AJ Green owners are not pleased because of his counting stats to start the year. But his peripheral numbers are actually still pretty nice. He's averaging 9 targets per contest, nothing wrong with that. And according to airyards.com, which is a great, great resource to get air yards information, only 6 wide receivers have more air yards on their targets. AJ Green also ranks 12th in air yards market share, which is another sign that good things will eventually come his way. And we can't ignore the fact that the Bengals are coming off 2 games where they played Baltimore and Houston. The Ravens have one of the most talented secondaries in the NFL, and the Texans' defensive line matched up really well against Cincinnati's weak offensive line. And things do open up for Cincinnati a good bit moving forward. They get Green Bay in week 3, who could get pressure on Andy Dalton, but it's at least a plus matchup for AJ Green himself. And then the Bengals will face Cleveland, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and Indianapolis. Those are great matchups for AJ Green. The usage is there, and we've got a large sample of AJ Green being an absolute monster on a football field. If you own him, you have to hold him. And if you don't, I would consider trading for him. Add Samaje Perine and sell Chris Thompson. Samaje Perine didn't play a single snap in week 1, and then all of a sudden in week 2, he was the lead back for Washington after Rob Kelly left the game with a rib injury. Now, I've made fun of Rob Kelly many times on this podcast. I was rude to Rob Kelly, but in fairness, Rob Kelly was playing pretty well in week 2 to start that game. But if he does miss time, this is going to allow Samaje Perine to be the early down back in that offense. I wish I liked Samaje Perine more as a prospect because I'd say that he would run away with that job, but I just don't know. I do know that Rob Kelly is average at best though. But Perine played 37% of the team's snaps on Sunday, Rob Kelly had 23% of them, and Perine ran the ball on 81% of the snaps that he played. That's a completely unsustainable number, but he was, without question, the team's early down bruiser. He ran the ball 21 times against the Rams on Sunday. Meanwhile, you have Chris Thompson, who's electric. He looks great. I love Chris Thompson. But he's now scored 3 times this year and he sits as a top five running back in fantasy football through 2 weeks. As much as I love Thompson as a runner, his production does point to him being a sell candidate in fantasy football. He only carried the ball 3 times in week 2, and he's been on the field for 44% of Washington snaps this year. Those aren't good numbers. And not only that, we've seen Chris Thompson on the field this much. He played 46% of the team's snaps last season. That's more than what he's done the first 2 weeks of this season. With Rob Kelly sidelined, will Chris Thompson see more work? Yes, he'll probably naturally see a little bit more work. I think that Chris Thompson is a useful flex option in fantasy, especially PPR leagues. But I saw it on Twitter today. I think there are plenty of folks out there who may overstate what this Rob Kelly injury does for Chris Thompson. That's especially true after these first 2 weeks of the season where Chris Thompson looks like a full-blown stud. The truth is, Chris Thompson and Rob Kelly play two very, very different roles for this Washington offense. And Chris Thompson saw plenty of opportunity last season to seize some sort of early down role. He's not built to be an early down back, you guys. He's a third down back, and he's a really good one. He's one of the best in the league at it. But that doesn't mean he's going to slot into Rob Kelly's workload. That's why Samaje Perine saw 21 carries in week 2. So if you own Chris Thompson, I would at least send out trade offers and just see how other people in your league are feeling. You can point to these two games and say, look, Chris Thompson's really good. Look at what he's done. But again, we know that fantasy football is a process over results game. If Chris Thompson catches 3 passes and sees 3 attempts next week, I can almost guarantee you he's not going to score the amount of fantasy points that he scored in week 2. So add Samaje Perine off the waiver wire, and if you own Chris Thompson, go ahead and try to sell him. Otherwise, use him as your flex. Sell Jaquizz Rodgers. You know, I'm not putting a ton of stock into something like snap rate for Jaquizz Rodgers in week 2 because the Buccaneers just dominated the Bears. That game got out of hand quickly. But the Bucs did run Jaquizz Rodgers 19 times in week 2, and he tallied 67 yards and a touchdown. Not terrible production. It was a very Jaquizz Rodgers type line. They did give Peyton Barber 10 attempts as well on the ground, but I think that had mostly to do with it being a blowout. One thing I do want to note with Jaquizz Rodgers is that Charles Sims played 30% of Tampa Bay's snaps against the Bears on Sunday. He was their primary pass-catching back. We knew that would be the case going into the season, but it does ding Jaquizz Rodgers a little bit. When Rodgers was fantasy relevant for 4 games last year, this excludes week 17 because no one cares about week 17 because we care about fantasy football. But those 4 games where he averaged nearly 23 carries per contest, Charles Sims was only active for 1 of them. And in that game, of the 4, Jaquizz Rodgers saw his lowest snap rate. At Jaquizz Rodgers' peak, that week 5 game against Carolina last year, he was on the field for 93% of Tampa Bay's snaps. When Charles Sims was back, that number was 61%. Essentially, what I'm saying is that Jaquizz Rodgers in this Doug Martin-less backfield could be slightly limited this season due to that additional body in the backfield. And that's really true when the Bucs see a negative game script. Because in that case, Charles Sims would be on the field more than Jaquizz Rodgers. That could potentially happen over the next 2 weeks. The 2 weeks that Jaquizz Rodgers owners should care a lot about because that's when he's the starter. That's before Doug Martin comes back. The Bucs will face the Vikings in Minnesota, and then they host the Giants the following week. Those could be negative game scripts. I'm not saying that they will. The Bucs could win both of those games, but they could be negative game scripts. But even if they're not, Minnesota and New York have 2 very good rush defenses. So Jaquizz Rodgers, even in a positive game script, might not be that viable in fantasy football. So for all of those reasons, Charles Sims, the negative game scripts, the matchups, that's why you should sell Jaquizz Rodgers this week. Add Jermaine Kearse. I can't believe we're talking about Jermaine Kearse, who's a New York Jet in 2017. He's a wide receiver 1 in fantasy football right now, you guys. What in the world is happening? I mean, the bottom line with Jermaine Kearse, I'm going to be pretty quick with this because it's pretty simple. He's in a bad offense with bad receivers, and in turn, he's seeing a decent amount of volume. He has 14 targets through 2 games. Now, if I use a free agent auction budget, I would not be spending money on Jermaine Kearse. He's more of the guy when you wake up on Wednesday morning and you look at your waiver wire, he's the guy that you just add afterwards. He has 2 touchdowns on 123 receiving yards with Josh McCown as his quarterback. That is not a realistic pace for Jermaine Kearse. In his air yards profile, again, this is from airyards.com, he has 150 air yards on all of his targets. That's nothing special at this point in the season. Again, he's just a fill-in on your roster, but I do think that he can fill in nicely because they're going to see so many negative game scripts. but don't spend money on him. It's not worth it. And don't blow a waiver wire spot on him. Add Chris Johnson. I'm just as shocked that I'm talking about Chris Johnson in 2017 as I am Jermaine Kearse. What is going on right now? But listen to this. I've talked about success rate on this podcast before. It's NumberFire's expected points model's way of showing the percentage of positive runs a running back gets. Was it a success or was it a failure? Does it help increase the odds of scoring or does it not? Is it a positive expected points play or is it not? That's what success rate shows. Usually running backs hover a 40% or so success rate because rushing is a lot less efficient than passing is in the NFL. On Sunday, against the Indianapolis Colts, Kerwin Williams ran the ball 9 times and none of them were successes. Not one. The thing is, Chris Johnson wasn't that much better. 2 of his 11 rushes were successes. But Chris Johnson was also signed off the street the other day. Chris Johnson was not on an NFL roster before David Johnson's injury. I think that he's going to steal the early down role in this offense, and while that's not going to be a very valuable role more than likely, he's still going to see volume, and you want something like that sitting on your fantasy football bench. By Joe Mixon. Through 2 weeks, Carson Wentz has 16 more rushing yards than Joe Mixon does. That's so depressing. But just like his teammate AJ Green, Mixon's seen 2 tough matchups to start the year against 2 very strong front 7s. But unlike AJ Green, Joe Mixon's usage is not very encouraging. He's carried 17 of Cincinnati's 46 total rushing attempts for a sub 37% rushing attempt market share. And he's only seen 4 targets through the air. So why in the world would you go out and buy Joe Mixon? Honestly, I think this is just a situation where you're playing the market. Mixon owners might hate him at this point, but he's been the best Cincinnati back in that backfield this season, at least on the ground. He's seen a 35.29% success rate, which isn't terrible, versus Jeremy Hill's 25% and Gio Bernard's 16.67%. And I think that we should be a little bit intrigued by the new offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor. When he was offensive coordinator in Miami, Lamar Miller's usage as a receiver was awesome. During those 2 seasons, Lamar Miller had 109 targets, and he averaged a 9.22% target market share in that Dolphins offense. And let's be honest, a big reason that Joe Mixon is not relevant so far this season is because of coaching decisions. He's not on the field. I'm not saying that he's been an unbelievable runner. That's not what I'm saying at all. But more volume would naturally make him more fantasy relevant. And they just changed their offensive coordinator. I think this is a really interesting time to buy Joe Mixon, especially if you can get him for a running back who's just sitting on your bench, because we know that Joe Mixon has a really high ceiling, or at least we think that he has a very high ceiling. Add Devin Funchess. Greg Olsen's out 6 to 8 weeks. It's super unfortunate, but someone has to step up in the Carolina Panthers offense. And that might be Devin Funchess. He's now played 76% of the Panthers' snaps through the first 2 games of the season. That's the most of any Panthers wide receiver. He's caught 6 of 9 nice targets for 88 yards. And he saw 7 of those targets in week 2, which is the game that Greg Olsen went out. That's the game that Greg Olsen was injured. And the Panthers get the Saints this week at home, so he could be a nice 1 week fill-in if you need a wide receiver off the waiver wire. And who knows? This is his 3rd season. This could be his breakout. Let's see. Add him off the waiver wire and find out. Sell DeMarco Murray. So DeMarco Murray is nursing a hamstring injury, which could explain why Derrick Henry out-attempted him 14-9 in Sunday's win over the Jaguars. But even if that's a valid excuse, I don't really care. If he's hurt, he's hurt. If this hamstring injury exists, then we have to react. And the thing is, Derrick Henry was the better running back in week 2. And quite frankly, he's been the better running back over the last half season. He looked a lot better by the eye test, and NumberFire's analytics backed that as well. Henry's success rate was around 71% on his 14 carries on Sunday, while DeMarco Murray's hovered around 11%. That's an insane difference. And meanwhile, DeMarco Murray saw the field on 54% of the team's snaps this past week, which was down from 73% in week 1. I'm not saying it's likely, but there's a chance that this is the start of a movement to get Henry the ball more. That would definitely make sense too because of this DeMarco Murray injury. They have Derrick Henry sitting there. Why would they not feed Derrick Henry while DeMarco Murray heals? So I think selling DeMarco Murray right now could end up being the smart move even after a bad game because there's a chance that his value continues to fall. Sometimes you have to sell low in fantasy football. Everyone knows who the buy low and sell high guys are. Sometimes you just have to sell these guys when they're low. And in situations like this specifically, you don't want to be a week late. Because what happens if Derrick Henry goes out on the field next week and dominates? Then all of a sudden DeMarco Murray has even less value. That's a very real possibility. Add J.J. Nelson and Jerron Brown. I think most fantasy owners will have their eyes on J.J. Nelson off the waiver wire this week because he's been the Cardinals' top wide receiver from a fantasy perspective this year. So yes, add him off the waiver wire. That's fine. As long as John Brown is sidelined and he's expected to miss week three, J.J. Nelson has a shot to be fantasy relevant. And I think J.J. Nelson's pretty good. But don't sleep on Jerron Brown in this offense either. So far this season, J.J. Nelson has two more targets than Jerron Brown, but Brown's seen 41% of the air yards in that offense. That's a top 10 number in football. And it's also significantly higher than J.J. Nelson's 31% air yards market share. And it's not like J.J. Nelson is the clear-cut number two wide receiver in Arizona. Jerron Brown was on the field for one more snap than Nelson in week two, and he played 25 more snaps in week one. I think both are fine ads off the waiver wire this week, but one will be far easier to obtain, and that one is Jerron Brown. Add DeShone Kizer. There's a chance that Vontae Davis returns to the Colts lineup this week because he did practice last Friday, and that would change this recommendation completely. If Vontae Davis plays for the Colts, I would probably not play DeShone Kizer in fantasy football this week. But if Davis is out again for the Colts, I think DeShone Kizer makes for a very interesting quarterback streamer this week. And not just interesting, I think it's logical, and I think that he could have a really nice game. On the year, only four teams have seen more deep balls or passes that travel 15 or more yards down the field than the Colts have. In week one, remember, they played Jared Goff, and in week two, they played Carson Palmer. In week one, Carson Palmer is just 1 for 6 for 24 yards and an interception against the Lions secondary on deep throws. But in week two, against the Colts, he was 5 for 10 for 166 yards and a touchdown. And then remember in week one, when Jared Goff played against this Colts team, he tore them up. He had a perfect quarterback rating on 6 deep attempts against Indianapolis. DeShone Kizer hasn't even played a full 2 games because he had a migraine in the middle of that week 2 contest against Baltimore, but he's attempted the third most 15 plus air yard throws in the league heading into week 3. He has the third most deep ball passes and he hasn't even played a full 2 games. Those passes haven't connected all that well against Pittsburgh and Baltimore because Pittsburgh and Baltimore have better secondaries, especially Baltimore, than Indianapolis does. And we know that DeShone Kizer has a decent floor because of what he can do with his legs. But in this plus matchup through the air, I think his ceiling is really, really enticing this week. Add the Packers defense. As of right now, I think the Packers defense make for the best streaming defense, even though I've talked up a couple of Cincinnati Bengals on this podcast. The fact remains, the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line is not very good. They've now allowed 8 sacks, which is tied for the third most in the NFL. They'll be traveling to Green Bay this weekend to face a Packers defense that obliterated a weak Seattle offensive line back in week one. Green Bay is currently 9.5-point favorites in that game, meaning they are more than likely going to see a positive game script, and that helps generate turnovers and force sacks. Basically, if Cincinnati plays the way that they've played the first 2 weeks of the season in week three, Green Bay is going to dominate them. Remember, defenses are all about turnovers and sacks. I don't care how many points Cincinnati posts against Green Bay. Add Rashard Higgins. Like I said last week, I'm going to be giving you guys a bonus transaction on this show each week that you can't find in the 15 transactions column on numberfire.com. And that transaction this week is to add Rashard Higgins because Corey Coleman broke his hand and he's out indefinitely, and Kenny Britt is looking like he doesn't even want to be on a football field. Kenny Britt is degaffing harder than Jay Cutler degaffs. Higgins is a 6'1", 196-pound receiver who had a really, really poor combine a couple of years ago, but he had great college production, which is certainly something that I care more about in a college prospect. He didn't do much last year in his rookie campaign, but he saw 11 targets in week two, and he could be in store for more as the team's potential top receiver. If Kenny Britt keeps degaffing, Rashard Higgins is going to be their top receiver. Volume matters in fantasy football, and Rashard Higgins could see volume. So he should be on your radar as you look at the waiver wire here in week three. That'll do it for the 15 Transactions show, though. Thanks so much for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the show, do so ASAP by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. It really goes a long way when you guys subscribe. And as I mentioned last week, if you leave a rating and review on iTunes, you'll automatically be entered for a chance to win a free NumberFire premium subscription for an entire year. I'll be drawing a name at random at the end of this month, so get on that. You can also follow me on Twitter at LateRoundQB, and if you have any questions for this week's mailbag show that will drop on Friday, you can send them to Twitter or email me at jj@numberfire.com. But please, guys, no start-sit questions. We need something a little bit more in-depth for a mailbag show. But I will get to some start-sit stuff on Thursday's episode. So thanks, guys. I'll talk to you then.